Hey, TV fans, if you're excited about the season of 1923, or if you're excited about the upcoming season of The Last of Us, go check out the Prestige TV podcast. We're covering both, including Sunday night, right after The Last of Us ends on HBO. Van Lathan and Charles Holmes breaking it down. The Prestige TV podcast. We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network, where I put up a new Rewatchables on Monday night. We did Sideways, me, Sean Fennessy, Chris Ryan. My mom loved it, which is all I care about. That's her favorite movie, or at least one of her top five. I am also going to be on Off the Pike with Brian Barrett on Wednesday. Me and him and Kevin Hench are going to do the State of the Red Sox and the State of the Patriots. We're not happy about this Trevor story, just FYI. Spoiler alert for that podcast when it goes up tomorrow. Also tomorrow on FanDuel Sportsbook, I always do a same game parlay of a Wednesday NBA game. I'm going to be putting that on my Twitter feed. If you follow me on Twitter, trying to figure out a perfect like 4-1, 5-1 off one of the games. So stay tuned for that. On this podcast, Hall of Fame guest Zach Lowe, my old Grantland teammate, we are doing a home and home this week. He's coming on this pod today. I'm going to his pod on Friday. It is all coming up next. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, taping this 1 o'clock Pacific time, Tuesday. My old friend Zach Lowe is here. We're doing a home and home this week. We're going to pick all-star starters and then go through some of the other all-star stuff in the East. And then we're going to do the West on his pod, the Low Post, later this week, probably Friday. This has been the hardest pick the all-star starter conference I've ever looked at in my entire life. I struggled with it. I changed guys around. I had a Google Doc. I'm moving people up. I'm moving people down. I could not settle on five guys. This is impossible. Do you ever remember it being this hard? Usually we had to struggle to get to a fifth guy. Now it's like there's eight guys. Who do we pick?
Well, part of it is, and I kind of shirked the assignment a little bit because I just ignored the fact that Jason Tatum is in danger of getting squeezed out of the starting lineup and just put Jason Tatum in my starting five because it's ridiculous not to have him start. So I had four locked in starters and just like one spot that actually did in that construction. I did not have a hard time with my starting five. But again, I cheated and I haven't looked at the NBA's ballot yet because I don't know. Are you a voter for this? Like, do you vote for the starters?
I am a voter for this.
Have we gotten the, I don't know if we've gotten the ballot.
Like, do you want to vote on this, but haven't gotten the ballot yet?
I mean, can we just list Tatum? As, like, what are we doing? If Jason Tatum has to come off the bench in the All-Star game potentially because we have to start guard X, it's ridiculous. Just put him in the starting lineup.
Well,
is that why you had a hard time with it? Because you didn't cheat like me?
No, I felt like I was cheating in a different way. I'm just, Giannis is going to be on my first team. He just is. He's starting for me. And if I have to start him at center and I have to cheat a little bit, I'm just doing that. So the question for me, I mean, the first hard part was Giannis, Durant, Tatum, and Embiid. Who's the odd man out?
Nobody. And, nobody.
Oh, you're going nobody. So you're going Tatum, nobody. Tatum at guard. You're putting everybody in. Is this just fear of the Philly fans? What is it?
No, just like what they're the four best players in the conference, and it's like clear. And what are we doing? Like, put them all in the All-Star starting five.
All right, but that's not fun. Then we just wrap the podcast up and I'll say goodbye to you and thank Kyle. Like, we have to make this hard. Let's say we have to obey the rules to some degree. Like, Jason Tatum's not a guard. Jalen Brown, you could really make an actual case that he might actually be a guard.
What's the difference?
Yeah, maybe there isn't a difference. But let's say just for fun, you had to pick three of the four. Who's your odd man out? You have to have an odd man out.
I think odd man out then is Embiid just because of games played and availability. Although now Durant's hurt, that's complicated. Yeah. But I mean, it's like these are going to be three of the five players on people's MVP ballots. Like, it's ridiculous how hard this is going to be. But I think just availability, it would be Embiid, which is ridiculous because every time he plays, it's like, oh, 40, 20 and five for Embiid.
Yeah.
But yeah, it has to. I think it would have to be him.
All right, let's go through the guys in order for the starters. So Giannis, who's at 32, 12, and 5 this year, but somehow having statistically like his least efficient year since the mid-2010s. Of all the jaw-dropping Giannis stuff, 13.2 free throw attempts a game. It's a little robust. It's a, yeah, lot,
it's
of,
a lot of free throws.
13 per game. You're just like, I'm going to the free throw line over three times a quarter when you play me. That just seemed like a lot. His usage rate is comically high, 38.9. Why is that, Zach Lowe?
Because Drew Holiday's missed a bunch of games and Chris Middleton's missed the entire season. And if he's not using up the possessions, it's like, all right, I guess Grayson Allen, you want to do some stuff for us? Marjon Beauchamp, you want to do some stuff for us? It's what else are you going to do? Joe Ingles, though. Joe Ingles has been helpful for them.
So Joe Ingles, there were some signs last night. First of all, he quit crunch time. Second, when did he tear his knee? This feels like a fast comeback. It was less than a year ago, right?
In the age of everyone takes 6 months longer than people used to take to recover from every injury, which is, I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing. That just is what it is. Like Jamal Murray took a long time. Kawhi takes forever. That's just the way it is. We've learned, science advances, knowledge advances. It is like a year ago. And maybe this is the benefit of not being that athletic to begin with. He looks like Joe Ingles. Just looks like, oh, Joe Ingles is back.
He didn't have any speed to lose. I was surprised. I thought the game last night was really good. Really, really, really entertaining. And at least the Knicks, we can debate the Mitchell stuff later, but at least the Knicks have reached a point now where the MSG games are fun. The crowd likes the team. They're competitive. They have a guy in crunch time who really has a lot of confidence. And what was one of the shocking things about the game was Ingles and Giannis were kind of two-man gaming it. Yeah. It was like, Ingles, you just showed up. Now, they don't have Middleton. When Middleton comes in, I'll be interested to see who the five is, how they use Ingles, stuff like that. But it goes to show, to your point, how desperate they were to have anybody who could create anything next to Giannis.
Well, Ingles has thrown, like, you don't realize, like, the Bucks are not a good passing team. And sometimes, like, just throwing an entry pass to Giannis is a freaking adventure for them. And then Ingles comes on, and you don't realize how much you're starving for a guy who can just like lob a pass to you in the middle of the lane when you slip a screen, or just thread an entry pass over a front or something like that. Until he comes in and does it routinely, and you're like, "Oh my God, the Bucks have someone who can do this. It's like a miracle."
Yeah,
he might be a bigger part of their team than I thought. I thought they overpaid for him. I might end up being wrong on that.
Yeah, as somebody who was once a great entry passer, I can really identify the other great entry passers. And you're right, the Bucks had no entry passers, and this is the first one. There's some weird advanced stats with Giannis about all of his unassisted baskets and how bad the assist rate is in the Bucks and stuff like that. So Ingles will help with all that stuff. The Giannis thing, so the Bucks are 26-14. Giannis has played 34, 40 games. He's been really, really, really like LeBron-level durable over the course of his career, where it's just like, even when he gets hurt, it seems surprising, and you just assume he's going to get up, even if his leg is like next to the scorer's table. Just like, go get your leg, Giannis. He's had four straight first-team All-NBAs, and this year is going to be the fifth. And I'm starting to think of him big picture, in that kind of like pantheon all-time, what are we watching context, where I had a friend of mine last week when everybody was going nuts about Luka and Jokic, including me on this podcast, say like, watch Giannis these next couple games. Like Giannis sees all this stuff. And then of course Giannis has the big games in a row. This is now a half decade of him just wreaking havoc. And it doesn't feel like he's 27. I'm trying to figure out the trade value. He's clearly the number one. It doesn't feel like there's any sign of a finish line with this. How long does this go for you?
Well, he gets better every year. He's a better passer now than he was even last year. And like defensively, like the Bucks have been bad on offense. It's like one of the sneaky big stories. They're 25th in offense, 25th. Like that means you're basically just better than the teams that are trying to lose if you're 25th. But on defense, there are entire stretches of the game when he and Lopez are in the game. It's like, what are you even supposed to do in the paint? Like it's a complete no fly zone with those guys around. His timing gets better and better. And why would there be a finish line? I just think, you know, I remember we did before the season, I think we did something on like which of the current guys who made the top 75 had the most at stake this season. And you picked Durant, which I think is, I thought you were going to pick Harden. You're like, nah, I gave up on Harden. He's not the number one guy on this team. You picked Durant, which I thought was a good pick. And I like kind of devil's advocately made the case for Giannis just because two-time MVP, every chance at a ring is precious. Bucks are kind of sneaky getting a little old around him. Middleton is a potential free agent this summer. He's not really played this season. Like, that's a story that I guess everyone's just assuming
he got hurt last season. This is year two of him not staying on the court.
And you kind of were the first one to sound the alarm bells last week on your pod that, you know, is there some frustration brewing within the Bucks, or is there some stuff going on? And I think it's more just frustration with people's health and availability and losing and like normal NBA, like doldrums, frustration stuff. But like, I think you hit on something, and it's not something we've really ever heard with the Bucks before. This is like, you know, happy-go-lucky, the Bucks, Milwaukee, it's fun. They're 17-14 since starting 9-0, and just they need to get Middleton back and see what they have on offense, because they just haven't looked kind of the same. And that, to your point about Giannis's efficiency, like, he's amazing, but this is not a peak Giannis offensive year, really.
All the Bucks fans got mad at me. It was like a 9-second throwaway where I was like, hearing some...
You know why, though?
Hearing it's not the good ship lollipop over there. Which, by the way, you've heard and we've all heard. And like a day after I said it, they blew a 12-point lead to... Who is it? Atlanta? With a minute and 10 seconds left? It's like, this is not the kind of thing that happens to a team that is like running on all cylinders.
And
sorry.
That's why it's funny. You know, it's a dumb game halfway through the season. I thought that win against the Knicks last night was important for them, because they were down 17 in that game. They had everybody but Middleton, basically. They had just lost to Charlotte by 29 points somehow on the road. And it just like, and if the Knicks just win that game going away, it begins to, all of a sudden it's like, oh, the Bucks, like, what's going on with the Bucks? Should we be worried about the Bucks? And they came back, like, that was a real comeback win where the team decided, like, yeah, we're gonna come out and play. We're gonna play hard. We're gonna play together. We're gonna try to win this game. But just watching it, I was like, this kind of feels like a good win for them. You wouldn't think midseason at the Knicks is a big deal for the Bucks, but I was like, that's a good win.
Yeah, but they're in the season so long. There's 7-8 inflection points where you kind of have a moment where you find out what kind of team you have. I thought the big thing for them is just Holiday was awesome in that game, especially down the stretch. And I loved watching him go at Brunson. I was kind of shocked Brunson was scoring on Holiday like that. I don't really have a lot of memories of people going at Holiday kind of one-on-one a lot and getting the shots they wanted off him. They how many times has that even happened? Chris Paul did it a little, but it's not a usual thing. But I thought the Bucks, I was impressed. I felt the same way. You know how this goes, because you're in the narrative game with the worldwide leader. Like, you have like two bad losses. It's a Tuesday. What's our first story going to be? And if there's some smoke, you kind of drift toward the smoke. And we were doing it with the Hawks with reason, because there's something like really wrong with that team, with the talent they have. And we've seen it all year. And then the stuff comes out. None of it was surprising. But with the Bucks, it was just, you know, small, subtle signs. They're always on the clock with Giannis. I know he's signed with them, but, you know, there's always going to be an inherent pressure to put a really good team around him. And he was doing a lot more than he usually does this year for 33, 34 minutes a game. Like, just the offensive workload he had was kind of stunning. Now, as you said, he's also evolving into the kind of player who can handle that workload. But 38.9 usage is really high. That's like Westbrook 2017 level high.
Well, and you were the first one to even mention the ownership situation there. And you did like months before anybody else, and then like it went radio silent and everyone was like, whoa, that was weird that Bill said that. And then all of a sudden it comes out that, like, you know, there was some actual fire there, and like, that's a whole thing too. I picked them to win the title this season, and I've just been continuously in like let me see their team mode, because Middleton is so important to their team. But they need him to get healthy and get stable, and Giannis needs him to get healthy and stabilize their offense like now.
When do you think I'm going to get to the point career-wise when I throw stuff out that people are going to be like, oh, he must actually know something if he just threw that out? I think when is that? Like 2025? What am I looking at?
You should be there, but this is where the Celtics thing comes back to bite you, because the conspiracy theorists will come out and say, oh, he's just trying to undermine the Celtics.
Right. Yeah, he's a Celtics fan trying to hurt the Bucks. Consecutive first-team All-NBAs.
Ooh.
This would be 5 for Giannis. Do you know who has the most consecutive first-team All-NBAs? There are 2 people, and the number is 11.
I'm going to guess it's a tie. It's Kareem and LeBron.
Very good guesses. It is Karl Malone, the James Harden of his generation.
What?
With 11 straight first-team All-NBAs.
Holy cow.
Yeah, this is why the work that we do on podcasts and the book I wrote and some of the pieces both of us have written, like just to put the Karl Malone stuff down before 100 years from now, the nerds come in and are like, was Karl Malone the best player of all time? It's like, it's shit like that for 11 first-team All-NBAs.
It also shows you the power of never getting hurt. Like, to his credit, right, he was never, ever hurt. There was never a season where, like, oh, he only had 30 games played this season. It was always healthy.
So after that, Bob Pettit and Bob Cousy playing against Plumbers both had 10 straight first-team All-NBAs.
Wait, who was tied with Karl Malone? Who was the other 11 one?
LeBron,
okay.
Yeah.
Korean?
9 in a row. Bird, Magic, and Oscar. 9 in a row. 9 first team All-NBAs in a row. Just banging them out. Our guy, Tim Duncan, you and I riding co-shotgun on, can we stop saying Tim Duncan wasn't one of like the best 7 or 8 players of all time? Like, I'm in the mode where now we're all fight people.
What else do people want? You want championships?
They don't care. He's not good
defense,
on TikTok.
You want passing?
No fun, yeah, there's no fun TikTok clip with Tim Duncan. Or a little the 2-minute Twitter clip of Tim Duncan was a problem. He doesn't exist. It was like no, the 5 titles were a problem. What about the time when he beat Shaq and Kobe in a playoff series when he was the only all-star on his team? Tim Duncan 8, Jordan, Kobe, Shaq, Elgin 7, and Jerry West 6. Those are our only 6 and up guys for consecutive first team All-NBAs. The reason I mentioned that is, to be one of the 2 best guys at your position or at center, the best guy for more than half a decade is pretty great.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that Giannis is looking at now. He got the title. He had the 50-point game in the game 6. He's 27. The work ethic's there. But now what are the next 3-4 years look like? You think about when Kobe basically reinvented himself from 08 through 2012 and just put his career at a totally different level. Like, he has a chance to do that.
Yeah, it's early in all these guys' careers, and the Embiid health stuff kind of puts him in a separate category, the early seasons that he missed and all that. But you look at, like, just the numbers that Luka and Jokic and even Tatum are putting up at their age, and it's like, if they stay healthy, like, if Jokic and Luka stay healthy, they're going to be top 15 players of all time. Like, and Tatum could, but then you're like,
Tatum will be like top 30.
Yeah, we're running out of like top 20 players of all time. We have too many guys. I don't know if it's like the numbers are, you're better at this than I am. The numbers today are like, you kind of have to remember we're 10% inflated compared to where we even were like 10 years ago in terms of points per game. Everyone's averaging 20 and 30 points a game. But what these guys are doing is you got to appreciate it in real time. Like, this is just all time great stuff, what all these guys are doing.
I was going to bring this up later, but we can do it now. I actually think the numbers are, you said 10%. It feels worse than that. It could be.
I was being polite.
And I think LeBron is a good indication. LeBron in year 20, I don't think athletically he's the same guy. If you did split screen of him in 2010 or him in 2013, a season that we both revere, that third Miami season where he was like, we were like, is LeBron going to shoot 60%? Is this a thing that might happen? Versus LeBron now, athletically, he's just not the same guy, but he knows how to take advantage of the pace of the game and the fact that you can't really guard anyone anymore. He can get to the basket anytime he wants, and he's still getting his 29. But I do feel like if you put 2010, like one of those 2 Cavs MVP season LeBrons into the league now, it's like 37, 38 a game, I think. I just don't think you would have been able to guard him.
A fun thing to do once or twice a year is watch the fourth quarter and overtime of the Ray Allen game in the 2013 finals, because they're down. Miami is down like 10 or 12.
Yeah. LeBron played the best 9 minutes of his career in that game.
And I don't know why that, I guess all the drama at the end kind of overshadows that, the Spurs collapsing, the Kawhi free throw, the Ray Allen shot. Like,
yeah.
I have it in a Pete. LeBron scored or assisted on 29 of their last 38 points. Yep. And on defense, to your point about his athleticism, it's like, oh my God.
Pippen level. Yeah, he was the highest possible level. So yeah, I look at that, and I said this on the pod last week, that it does feel a little like when the football, the passing got a little easier and the numbers just changed. And we might have to look at this. I don't know what the cutoff is, but you might have to look at somewhere in the mid-2010s. Once the threes really came in and the spacing changed and the guys who were on the court changed, which I think is another big thing in this. Just go back and watch some of those 2012 games, the plotting centers we had to watch and, you know, the teams that tried to play with size. And I do wonder, like the David Lee Draymond moment, maybe that's the moment when David Lee gets hurt and Draymond goes, and maybe that's the moment the league just shifts.
I think of Roy Hibbert and Peril Antich from the Hawks, right? Pacers first round series that year, when it was like, oh my, yep, God, are the Pacers in trouble because Peril Antich can shoot threes? And
maybe that was the moment. You're right.
I also think of what a big deal it seemed at the time when the Heat finally started Bosch at center in one of their playoff runs. Is like, oh my God, this Bosch at center. Okay. And now it's like, of course, Chris Bosh started at center. Like, why were they, what were they messing around with? Remember when Paul Millsap was a three for a minute? When he entered the league, is like, is he a three or a four? It's like, Paul Millsap?
The Boston, the 08 Boston Celtics, I always say this, inadvertently invented small ball and didn't even realize it. Because remember, they love to go big. They love to have Perkins with KG and Big Baby or Leon Poe. And they, you know, that was the mentality. But then the game four of the Lakers series, that was when they went small. And it was the lineup. All the Celtics fans were like, every time we play this lineup, they kick ass. And it was like Eddie House, Posey, Ray Allen, Pierce, and Garnett. And the spacing was there. And all of a sudden, they, you know, the scoring was unlocked. But at the time, we were like, whoa, what a gamble.
I'll tell you when the inflatable statistics really, like when it landed hard on me, like this is something I have to internalize and remember all the time, talking about these numbers, is two seasons ago when Colin Sexton averaged like 24.5 points a game. And I was like, man, that is a Colin Sexton. Like,
yeah, that's
a
lot.
Hell of a season for Colin Sexton. I'm like, maybe Colin Sexton averaged 25 points a game. Something must be going, and no offense to Colin Sexton, he's a good player. I like him. But like, that was a moment where I was like, that's when it landed on me. It's like, this is just a thing I have to keep in mind every time I talk about a player's numbers. Like, oh, so-and-so OG Anunoby is averaging 19.8 points a game. Like, that's a big scoring number. It's like,
yeah, that's that like big. 15 now. Yeah, the usage rate stuff. I just feel like in the old days, like, remember the classic example, Perk. Shout out to Perk. We love Perk. But OKC would run the token like two Perk plays. Nobody does that anymore. Nobody runs the token two plays for their big guy just to make sure they get their, you know, get their hands wet before they just have to set picks for the rest of the game.
That's like part of Jordan era Bulls scripture is the Cartwright post-ups. Like, you got to give Big Bill some touches early in the game because he's got to defend. Like, every single game is like, got to give Cartwright the post touches. And Bill was like, he was a good, great post player. So, you know, it's fine. But yeah,
that was the whole point of the triangle, was that, and the whole reason Phil Jackson was so committed to it was he wanted everybody in the player to touch the ball and be involved, and he wanted movement, and he didn't want the ball to be stuck with one or two people. And now in 2023, the goal for half of these teams is to have the ball be stuck for two or three people. And that's it. So I don't know. I don't know if it's better or worse, but the stats are definitely screwed up. Let's take a break.
Yeah, and then, All-Stars.
And then we'll keep going. Keep the NBA season going with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. New customers, you get $150 of free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Safe, secure, super easy to use, and you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores to threes drained. On every Wednesday, I look at the NBA schedule. I pick a same game parlay. I tweet it out. FanDuel does a cool graphic, and we're off. I'm going to do that on Wednesday. Stay tuned for that. FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the aforementioned same game parlay. Oh, yeah. And guess what? FanDuel is live in Ohio, so you can get in on all the action with great offers just for you now and throughout January. Don't miss your chance to get $150 in free bets with promo code BS. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NBA. You must be 21 plus in select states. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable free bets that expire 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
Achtung, es folgt eine wichtige Botschaft Ihres Mobilfunkanbieters.
Ey Mann, es gibt Leute, die drücken immer noch zu viel Knete ab.
Nein, nicht frisch.
Lebara ist ja irgendwie smarter.
Ja, smart.
50 Gigabyte für nur 8,99.
Wenig Knete.
Ich zahle doch nicht mehr für weniger.
Nee, das wäre auch schön blöd. Lebara, deine Knete, deine Entscheidung.
Nice.
Alle Details zu unseren Tarifen finden Sie unter lebara.de.
All right, so far we've only picked one all-star starter. It's Giannis. We're at quite a pace. Kevin Durant was having one of the four best, I say, stretches of his career. I'm very hesitant to say best season because I still remember the 19 playoffs when he was just destroying everybody with his free agency coming before he got hurt. 2014 is just...
Slim Reaper.
2014 is a great basketball reference. What the fuck season? You look at it, you're like, wait, 32 points a game. He played over 3,000 minutes. Like, just stuff we don't see anymore. I thought 2017 with the Warriors, that first like season when they were really, really like, oh my God, this is great. That was a really fun version of him. And then this last version of him where, you know, almost a 50-40-90 guy, 30 points a game, just all the usual stuff. It's crazy. He doesn't even have the highest usage rate on his team. Kyrie does. But just the efficiency. He's playing really hard on both ends, which raises the question, why didn't you play this hard when Steve Nash was the coach, which is a whole other story. But yeah, this is the best I've seen him play in a while. Where do you have him?
I mean, he's a no-brainer all-star starter, and I think you keep him there. Like, he's played 39 games. I think he's missed two games, and you look at it up and down, like, everyone's missed 10 games, 7 games, 8 games. Like, even if he misses the next 15, he's still an all-star starter because he was that good. And yeah, I have nothing to add. The guy's just completely outrageous at every possible part of the game. He's the most well-rounded scorer maybe ever. And defensively, this is as good as he's ever been. And I actually think the Nets will miss him just as much, if not more, on defense than on offense, which is crazy. But he's been that good of a two-way player for them. He was right. I mean, who knows? It's impossible to pick an MVP right now, but he had as much of a claim as pretty much anybody, which is crazy. It's crazy he's only won one MVP. We're going to get to the end and be like, that guy was MVP once. And
so is Kobe.
It was nine years ago. It's hard to win MVP.
Yeah. Sometimes it's circumstance, whatever. And he also, you know, he went to Golden State and became part of a much bigger ensemble during the peak of his career when he probably wouldn't have won a second one. It's funny. I remember when I did all those pods with him, there was one time we were talking about the All-NBA and the All-League, and I was like, it was either him or Curry, and I was like, yeah, you missed too many games. I put you on the second team, or I put Curry on the second team. It was one of them. And he was so confused by the logic of like, but wait a second, I'm one of the best players in the league, or Curry's one of the best. Why wouldn't it be first team? Like, what does it matter if I miss some games? Like, it's still, it just like wasn't registering with him. But when you have this many great guys, the games played does end up becoming one of the deciding things. It's one of the reasons one of the many reasons we love Jokic. Guy's out there. He's durable. If you turn on a Nuggets game and he's in street clothes, you assume something horrible happened.
I was interesting. It has been interesting. We're way off track now, but I was interesting to you. And who was it? It was Waz and
Van.
Yeah, and Van. And it's been interesting. We were talking about this on the show today. Like, Zach, you got to talk about, is it likely Jokic, you know, do you need to start warning people that Jokic could win a third straight MVP? And I'm like, I think the public discourse has kind of come around to just, he's awesome. Like the whole like Jokic skepticism is kind of weirdly faded away. Like it's to the degree that there ever was any, it's just like, everyone's kind of like, yeah, if he wins, that's fine. If he wins three in a row, like I thought there would be this outcry of like, we can't give it to him. He hasn't won a championship. And it's kind of like, yeah, if he wins it. He's averaging a triple-double, basically shooting 60%. He has the respect of pretty much everyone now.
And his team's much better this year, which has brought out all of these new pieces. I mean, yesterday they played the Lakers and he's like, I'm just going to take 5 shots. I'm going to see if I can get to 20 assists. I'm going to see if you can make a YouTube montage of all my assists in this game. Do you see that one where he went down the right? He went driving down the right. He did this spin move, went on the right. It looked like he was going to lay up and then wrapped around to a cutter down the middle.
It's like,
all right, I've never seen that before except for Larry Bird. I've never seen that specific pass. He, all right, we're, the thing with him is he just has to be such a delight to play with. Like if you're on that, and that, that's like my, to me, like the final level of hoops is like, if the other guys are like, I just can't believe I'm on this guy's team. It's like, if you're in pickup, you know, you're waiting all day and then you end up on the most fun team to be on. And you're just like, oh my God, I hope we keep the court. I love playing with this guy. I don't want to lose. I just want to keep winning. And that's what all those guys in that team, they're all better because they met Nikola Jokic.
Well, and you're, you know, this is the double-edged sword of the usage rate stuff you mentioned before is, you know, guys want to touch the ball. Like there is something to the guys will play harder and on defense and be happier and do all the little things more if they're not just sort of chilling on offense while
right.
Trae Young runs 90 pick and rolls every game or Luka runs 90 pick and rolls every game. And you can win that way. Like Harden almost won the championship with that kind of style. You just have to be like one of the five best players in the league and you need to have another guy who's one of the 12 to 13 best. It's hard, but you can win that way. But there is something to the like people want to touch the ball. Like even I don't need to shoot, but like pass it to me. Let me do a handoff. Let me drive and kick. Like I want to do something.
It's basketball atrophy. This is the hardest thing with the Celtics with Neesmith. As you knew, I owned a beachfront house on Neesmith Island. And he just stood in the corner for 2 years. And it's like, is this guy good or not? I'm like, nah, you know what? This guy gives a shit. He's super athletic. I'm keeping the house. And now he goes to Indiana. He gets to play with Haliburton, who's one of the most fun guys in the league to play with, on a coach where everybody gets to touch the ball and move. And now it's like, guess what? He's an asset. I do think basketball atrophy, sometimes it's hard to even say, I don't know. I don't know if this guy's good. It would be really fun as a GM to try to figure out, is this guy like kind of an underutilized asset or not? Romeo Langford, I gave up on. And even though he's had some good Spurs games. Well,
I mean, I can tell you the Kings, when they traded for Herter, that's what one of the things they were betting on is like, this yes. guy can do stuff we haven't seen him do. And it's hard to fault the Hawks. They made the conference finals and all that, and he was a huge part of that. But like they bet on this guy's got more to his game, and we can bring it out with Sabonis doing all the funky handoff stuff that he does and all that.
So if Ben Simmons does himself combust in that round two.
Oh my God.
There's like 9 sliding door moments from that, right? Atlanta, we don't have to do the asterisk with every Trae Young conversation. Well, they did make the conference finals, and then you just kind of have to say that. He's been not fun to play with for 4 of the 5 years that he's been in the league, or maybe even 4.5. But then...
Relevant to our Eastern Conference All-Star discussion that we're supposed
he's
to be
not on
having
the list.
Right now.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, yeah. Let me keep going. Last thing on Durant. Before he got hurt, would you have had him second team all defense?
I haven't actually sat down and listed the
but would
the
he
players.
Have been in that conversation at least? Yeah, he would have, right? 100%
for sure. 100% yeah. for sure.
And I think that's why I wanted to mention that. The true shooting of stat, I don't totally understand, except for when it's over 60, that's kind of where you want to be. But when it gets higher than 60, I don't really know how to put it in perspective. But Durant's true shooting was 67% this year, which is usually where like dunking centers are.
Yeah. It's like DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan leads the league in field goal percentage.
Yeah, so I thought that was notable. But, you know, this is who he is. Since his first, like, good season in 09, he's been 28-7-4 every game. This year, he's 37-4. He's always been close to a 50-40-90 guy.
I was
going to
say, I
years.
Think he's only actually done 50-40-90 once, maybe twice.
But he's always lingering.
It's right there every year. It's like 50-41-89, 52-39-92. Yeah. It's crazy. He's close every single year.
And then the other thing, he's sixth in points per game, which maybe that's how when these stats are so weird now, that's one of the things we'll have to look at is like, were you a top 7 scorer how many years in a row? And then maybe that'll be the cutoff. All right, Tatum. So Tatum's basically having from a shooting standpoint, because he's 47, 35, 86. So he's not really a 50, 40, 90 guy. But the numbers are basically KD numbers, right? 31, 8, and 4 is like a typical awesome KD season. A little bit of a bump because of where we are, but the free throw attempts are now up to 8.6. Delighted to no end. I've been arguing about that for 3 years. Like, just go to the line twice a quarter. Can you at least do that? He's doing that. over nine threes a game. He's durable as fucking shit. 39 out of 41 games, 36.7 minutes a game.
It's a lot.
Which in this era is a lot. In the old, you go back to the old KD, go look at KD on Basketball Reference where I think he has 4 or 5 years where he's over 3,000 minutes in a season.
If someone averaged 40 minutes a game today, that's all we would talk about on TV for every single day of the NBA season. It's like, oh my God, he's averaging 40 minutes a game.
Nick Nurse is so close. He could just, 3 more minutes a game, you could, they'd start talking Raptors. Usage is okay, 33. Pretty solid, right? To score 31 points a game, 33, not bad. Speaks to the ball movement and the guards on the Celtics more than anything, and the pace. Here's what was interesting with me. First Celtic ever to score 1,200 points halfway through the season. I feel like we've moved to a world, I feel like the total points title should matter more than points per game because now you're bringing durability into it.
Who has that right now?
It's probably Tatum or Luka would be my guess. Because Tatum's only missed two. I think Luka's only missed a couple. But just in general, like, if you score 2,400 points in a season, you either average 30-plus a game or you played 80 games or both. And that list isn't long either. But I don't know. I like the combo, the durability.
It's Luka right now.
Yeah. KD's best season ever was 32-7-6 in 2014.
That's Slim Reaper season. Russ was hurt part of that season, right?
50-39-87. So we always wondered, like, could Tatum, he's never going to be as great as KD, but could he be in the vicinity? And you would say I would say the vicinity of a peak KD season, right?
Yeah. Look, I mean, like, let's simplify right now. If you cheat like I did, if you just had to pick the five all-star starters with like reasonable positional rules in the East.
Yeah.
This is who they should be. Tatum, Giannis, Durant, Embiid, and Donovan Mitchell. Do we at least agree on that? Like, if you finagle the rules so you can pick the five best guys, those are the starters in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, my rule with this is, if that was a fivesome, could they make sense playing basketball together? And I think Embiid, Giannis, Tatum, Durant, Mitchell, even though they'd be long,
dude,
would still work.
I could coach that team. That would We'd work. Be fun.
I mean, we coached a celebrity team once.
We lost.
Well, Kevin Hart killed us. I've rooted against all his movies ever since.
I just remember sitting awkwardly on the bench talking to a supermodel whose name I don't remember anymore, but she was delightful.
Victoria's Secret. She was great. She didn't care about PT.
No.
She was great. So with Tatum, I guess my question for you is there another level to go up beyond this, or is this the ceiling for him offensively, factoring in that the game continues to change and maybe points will continue to go up a slight bit? But I mean, what's reasonable? Is 34 points a game reasonable for him?
Yeah,
I feel like you think it is reasonable?
I don't think this is the ceiling, just because, look, the numbers will be what the numbers are, but I think qualitatively he will have better three-point shooting seasons than this and better three-point shooting stretches than this. And I think we'll see the same Giannis thing where, like, maybe his assists never leap that much and leap off the page, but you'll see passes every year, every week. You're like, oh, that's not sure he would have made that pass like last season. His passing will just get incrementally better every season. He gets experience being the guy and having the whole defense throwing at him every game. So I don't think this is, I mean, his ceiling just can't get much higher than this because he's already so good, but I don't think we've seen the best Jason Tatum yet.
Yeah, he'll have like a 42% three-point shooting year or something like that. Now, I'm glad you mentioned the passing because I was at my daughter's high school has this whole event where they compete against this other rival school and all the winter sports all at once. So like she played her girls soccer and then the boys soccer and then the boys basketball played. And we have like really good LA basketball, right? So this was Crossroads against Brentwood. Not like two of the top 10 LA teams, but really good, like good basketball. And I was sitting there watching. Brentwood was like doing this frisky press thing. And I was sitting there watching it with my mindset in what I watch every night with NBA. And I'm just like, why is that guy penetrating and then doing the one-handed loop pass to the guy in the corner? And you're thinking like, oh, because the NBA players I'm watching are aliens. Like even that Tatum pass that he can do now, which he couldn't do 2 years from now, no normal person can make that pass. And we're just like, yeah, he's added this pass. It's like, yeah, he's added the single hardest pass you can make when you're a scorer and your mentality is to score, to just suddenly whip it cross court into the corner. I don't know. I just feel like the league is just getting better and better and better.
CJ McCollum. I was watching Pelicans Wizards last night. CJ McCollum had this play on the sideline where he like gathered a tricky pass that almost led him out of bounds. And just like in a snap, like in a play where you and I would have just fallen over and the ball would have gone out of bounds.
Right.
And like before you even knew what was happening, he was rising up for like an absolutely gorgeous mid-range jumper off the glass. And I'm like, wait, I had to rewind. I was like, what just happened? How did CJ McCollum do that? And it's like, oh, because these guys are doing things with their bodies that you and I just were not. Not only can we not do them, like we don't even understand what the hell is going on. They're so ridiculous. And
yeah, the equipment's great. All the stuff thinking, oh, my calf hurts a little bit. You can have somebody beat the hell out of your calf until that goes away. It's amazing stuff. All right, so we're there on Tatum. By the way, only 30 guys ever have scored 1,200 points at the halfway point of the season.
Wow.
That was, I saw it at Boston Sports Info, kind of an underrated Boston sports account, but that guy had that. Shout out to that guy. Okay, so you have Embiid. All right, this is where I'm going to differ. I'm going more traditional. I have Donovan Mitchell. I'm glad you're sitting down. I have Tyrese Halliburton as my other All-Star.
It's fine.
And you know why? Because I want to see him in the All-Star game. He's fun to play with.
Hey,
remember
look,
that
man.
Stretch when we had no good point guards in the All-Star game and it was like Jason Kidd should just have to play for both sides and then Chris Paul got good and then we had enough point guards again? Halliburton in the All-Star game is going to be awesome. He probably won't shoot. He'll have like 2 points and 12 assists.
Look, if I can't put Tatum at guard and I have to bump one of the front court guys, Tyrese Halliburton might be the right answer. Like he's on my, so I've got those five locks in, right, that I have as my fake starting lineup. And then I have five other guys that I'm like, I'm pretty sure these should be the next five guys in the All-Star game. And he's one of them. Like he's like the advanced stats, whatever numbers you want to use. They're good. Like the Pacers are good and they're not going anywhere. He absolutely deserves it. The shooting numbers and the passing numbers are outrageous. Like, I don't think that's an are you sitting down?
Okay, good.
If you've been paying attention to the NBA,
the Pacers are 23-18. They over and over again win games in the fourth quarter with like really smart offense, and because Halliburton is fantastic, he's a franchise player. He's 20-10-4 this year, 48-41-89 percentages. He's almost a 50-40-90 guy.
56% on twos stands out to me too. Like his finishing, the question with him is like, is he athletic enough to finish in the lane, to beat switches, to do all that stuff? And he's like, he's answering all those
questions
immediately is the number one guy. He's answered all those questions.
I remember I was talking during that draft because I loved Halliburton, and I was talking to somebody who had a pick in the top, let's say top 11. And I was like, I don't understand this Halliburton thing. He's going to be good. You guys overthink this stuff. And the guy said to me, his shot takes too long to when he shoots it, it's like the release is, he's just not going to be able to shoot that way in the NBA. He won't be able to create his own shot. And I was like, I don't know. This is who he is now, but we already see like he's going to be way better. They overthink this shit all the time. This was a guy who played so well with everybody else and all the stats were like, he didn't need the ball to be awesome, which is like, that's the number one thing I'm looking for now with the way basketball is played. Like, do you not need the ball that much and can you still affect the team? And this was like the number one example of that. He's a 2010 guy, which is a bigger deal than I think people realize. I went and looked this up. Do you count James Harden and Russell Westbrook as point guards or no?
Yeah.
When they did their 2010s? Okay.
Yeah.
So we've only had 32 seasons ever of 2010. And they were done by the following people. Oscar Robertson a bunch of times, Magic, Chris Paul, Isaiah, Kevin Johnson, Tim Hardaway once, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Tiny Archibald once, Darren Williams once, John Wall once, and Tyrese Halliburton this year. And I think he's 23.
Should be an all-star. I mean, we can talk about the other guard candidates. So who was the guard that you that he was the toughest call over, like your first guard off the bench for the Eastern Conference?
Jalen.
Yeah, if we're counting him as a guard, I think that's the right answer.
Well, let's do those three, and then we'll do Embiid. The Mitchell's the one who has to be in there. 29 a game. He's almost a 50-40-90 guy.
Cavs
the
are
shooting,
good.
The efficiency of him, every single instinct we ever had with that trade of like, this will be great for him. This is the perfect team for him to go to. It's been realized. The only thing I worry about one iota is just the Garland piece of this. Because Garland was an all-star last year. And just... I thought they were going to be kind of co-driving on the road trip where it was like, all right, when we get to Kansas City, we'll switch. And it's like, this is Mitchell's car. And I just wonder how is Garland going to feel about that long-term?
So far,
probably fine.
Well, but we'll see. I mean, but he was on my short list of guard candidates still. I mean, 21 and
Garland.
8 on good shooting. They've been, I think, +6 per 100 possessions when he plays without Mitchell. He has missed 9 games that everybody has. He's still.
He got poked in the eye, though. That was different.
Yeah, that was right at the beginning of the first game of the season, I think. He still had one hell of a season and is, I think clearly Cleveland's second best all-star candidate over Mobley and Allen.
I've kept all my Mobley stock. I was hoping for 10% more this year
whole,
from him.
Like, so it's just crazy to me that every year two things happen and they're totally contradictory. Every year there's a Lowry Markkanen or a Victor Oladipo where it's like, oh my God, we gave up too early on this guy. Young guys, some guys take time. And at the same time that's happening, everyone's like, Lowry Markkanen got to find the right place, right time, right maturity level, whatever it is. At the same time that's happening, the same people are like, what a disappointment Scotty Barnes and Evan Mobley are in their second seasons. Just these guys are just regressing. It's just a disaster. Oh my God. It's like, how can you believe both of those things at the same time? Scotty Barnes and Evan Mobley are going to be totally fine.
Mobley's fine. He just didn't go up offensively. Like he still can't shoot.
He's still shooting like 56% out. His twos are crazy. Yeah,
what are threes?
The
threes 20. Are a disaster. I thought the threes would be a little better, and they teams
it's early,
just play.
Man. It'll come. He's 20 years old.
I was throwing the Tim Duncan name around with him. I just wanted it to go up a notch. Tim Duncan won the finals in his second year. Barnes, I'm way more alarmed about, and I think it's a combination of how they're using him. And he's lost confidence in his shot. You can see it. And teams are now playing him like this guy doesn't really want to shoot. Like he's getting
they're playing him like Simmons and Draymond.
Yeah, he's getting the Simmons treatment. So that I think that's more alarming because in July, I think we both agreed, oof, I don't know if I want to put Scotty Barnes in a KD trade. This was July. Now you'd be like, wait, I can get KD for Scotty Barnes. I think that has changed. Mobley, you know. As I said, I'm keeping all my stock.
Oh, you couldn't. Mobley is unbelievable. 14-9, but the defense. I mean, defensively, Mobley is as advertised. Like already,
all the fun advanced numbers that we always wanted to be able to just look up on a dime, and now they all exist. All the rim protection stuff with him. All the five man. Like he's fine. Can you start making some threes?
Give him
please.
A little time.
Just start making some threes. Get in the gym.
Get in the gym, says
get
Simmons.
In the gym.
Oh my
no, I'm
God.
Kidding. I love Mobley. You're my guy. Wait, before we keep talking about Mitchell, let's take a break. Okay, Mitchell, here's another one. This is how the stats are just getting weird. Mitchell's a shooting guard. 31.8 usage, not high. 63% true shooting, really high for a guard. 49, 41, 87%. Shooting splits. It's just unusual. I don't really know how to process it yet. That we might just this is this year an aberration or is this where we're just heading? And it might be where we're heading. Maybe these guys every year they get a little more skilled, just a little better combined with the pace. Like everyone's been talking about this for the last week. But if you just showed me that Donovan Mitchell whole thing before the year, if you showed that to me 5 years ago and were like, these are gonna be Donovan Mitchell's stats in 2023, I would have been like, is he the leading MVP candidate? You were like, these are basically Kobe stats with better percentages.
And I said this after he scored 71 points. He's not even like top five in MVP. Like, he wouldn't crack hardly anyone's ballot in the MVP. It's insane what these guys are doing.
What's your perfect fifth guy for them in crunch time? You can go grab anyone from any roster, realistic, who makes like between $9 and $18 million.
Let me bring up. All right. So yeah, I have to be realistic.
So is it like a Bogdanovich? You probably can't get because you don't have the picks anymore.
No.
Caruso, I think, is off the market now that the Bulls have shown a lot of signs of life the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, 19 and 22. The Bulls are coming. The Bulls are coming right along. I mean,
they've been good for 3 weeks. Like, they gave the Celtics everything they could handle last night. The Bulls are in the mix again.
They've played the Celtics tough every game. It would have to, if I'm being realistic, salary wise and like ambition wise, I think a guy like Dorian Finney-Smith would be fine. Like, just like, I don't need, you want, everyone would say OG Anunoby and this and that, but just realistically, what's possible both trade wise and salary wise going forward? Like, that's a guy like that would be fine.
So LeVert for Dorian? Nah, I don't think Dallas does that.
That's an interesting trade, though.
It is interesting.
That's a really interesting trade. Did you just make that up right now?
But listen, this is why I'm in the Hall of Fame for fake trades. I didn't get there by accident, Zach Lowe.
Another ball handler for Luka.
Man, it's an interesting one. The Dallas people love Finney-Smith, though.
They do. But he's good. Finney-Smith, every feel good like team one of those, needs a Finney-Smith.
One of those three guys needs to be traded, though. Hardaway, Bullock, or Finney-Smith, because that's really the only way they're going to be able to improve this year. Yeah, so the Mitchell thing, I talked about this last week, and I know you did too, but just like, if it's happening on the Knicks, it's fun. But I'm also glad it's happening on Cleveland, because I care about Mobley, and I care about Garland. I also love Garland. I love both of those guys. And I actually think this was the best scenario for everybody, that he went to Cleveland, because we have a real contender. I think the Cavs are going to be heard from. And it's been fun for Mitchell. It wasn't fun watching him last year. He didn't seem happy.
The Knicks are 22-19, and they have the fifth best point differential in the Eastern Conference. It's not like they're suffering, you know?
They have two guys on my top 12.
You're giving the Knicks two all-stars?
They're in my mix.
They're in the mix for sure.
My third guard was Jaylen Brown. I feel terrible about this because I watch more Celtics than anybody else, obviously, and I think he's been awesome this year. And 27-7-3. Paul George's best year in 2019 was 28-8-4. Jalen's shooting 50% this year. Paul George shooting 44% that year.
What are the threes, though? Because Jalen's at 32 something now, right?
Jalen's at 34 and Paul George is at 39. Yeah, Paul George is a little bit better. But this was the case of when it was like, we got to trade Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard. It's like, and I remember on this pod laying out the case, and people thought I was being a homer. By the way, I've been wrong plenty of times. I'm just saying this
time.
We all have. I was like, look, why can't this guy be Paul George? They're the same size. They have the same pedigree. He's been in big games already, like Paul George in those early Indiana years. Like, why can't that happen? And it feels like it's happening. Paul George, still, there's a cerebral playmaking piece that I'm not sure Jaylen will ever totally have. But it's better. And I think he's a better ball handler than he used to be. And he's also, I think, the most competitive he's been. I do think that Warriors series and Draymond standing over him and that whole thing was a little bit of a reckoning for him. There's like an edge to Jaylen this year that I don't feel like he had last year. You agree with that?
He's more physical than peak Paul George, I think. Just stronger and more physical going to the basket. Like, people bounce off of him, and he clears space so easily just with physicality. Paul George does it with like guile and footwork and speed. It's actually kind of hard to believe this will be Jaylen Brown's second All-Star game. Like, he feels like he's been such a preeminent player for so long. It's going to be his second All-Star game.
Oh, he's been in a shitload of playoff games at this point.
Yeah.
He's almost been in probably in like 90 playoff games.
And a no-brainer All-Star. I mean, we don't even have to.
Yeah, I had the five guys and then the three guys that I felt like were no-brainers. Actually, two and a half, Embiid and Jaylen Brown. Let's talk about Embiid. He's 28-39. They're 24-15. They're 7-4 without him. And he's going to miss a couple more. There's some sore foot thing. I'll just say it's kind of quiet right now in Philly for Embiid on game 3 of sore foot. As you know, nothing scares me more. in the world than centers with feet or shins or any sort of anything from below the knee. Makes me fucking nervous. And he has a injury history, obviously. With all that said, a ridiculous offensive season so far. He's almost 34 a game, 10 rebounds. Usage almost 38, which is like really, really like almost record-setting high for a center. 11.6 free throw attempts, which you know I love. And when he plays, he's played big minutes and he's played awesome. And he's had some best player in the court games. It made me think like, I think I've said this before, but don't you think they should just keep track of who the best player in the court was for every game? Just so we can see what that looks like at the end of the year. Just best player in the court. I know it's subjective, but it would be fun to look at the end of the year and be
how
like,
many times? Yeah.
Jokic had 39 best player in the court games. Embiid's had definitely, he's in the top five for best player in the court games.
And he has that sort of, he and Harden have the pick and roll, obviously, but he has that like 13 foot jumper out of the pick and roll where he just like right inside the foul line, he takes a regular pick and pop jump shot. And yeah. Your only defense against that is like, you just have to hope he misses. You have to hope he has a cold night because some nights he'll make like 70% of those shots. You're like, oh, okay, we lost. Like, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, when Shaq was at his peak and he was unbelievable and he was so dominant, it was mostly brute force, right? There was, especially we were coming out of like watching Kareem and watching Hakeem, especially Hakeem and McHale and these people that had just become artists on the low posts. And Shaq was never an artist, but he was so athletic and he was so much fun to watch. But you would never have called him an artist. Like, he had good footwork. The stuff Embiid has added the last couple of years, there's some real artistry to it.
Oh.
That little one-legged shot he has and some of his, like, drop step stuff. I do feel like he's worked on it and he's gotten better on it and he probably doesn't get enough credit for it.
Yeah, and he's at his best when he's decisive. Like when he catches and just goes and he knows what he wants to do, there's nothing anyone can do with him. The only semi weak spot is that his turnovers are up a little bit this year. He can get a little sloppy passing it, but that game he had against Utah when he had 50, whatever he had.
Oh my God, like, I watched that one.
You just sat back and you're like, this guy is just, man among boys. Like, there's just nothing anybody on the court can do with this guy. He's doing whatever he wants. Yeah,
pretty
Shaq,
crazy.
Shaq was like, teams would sign players whose entire job was to just foul Shaq. Like, just we need like three backup centers, and your whole job is just foul Shaq because there's nothing else we can do.
Yeah, he did that thing where if he got to his spot in the block, it was over. If he was within 4.5 feet of the basket, like, what were you gonna do? You had to foul him because all he had to do was swing around, and it was done. I would say. So it's January 10th, 2023. Embiid was in the 2014 draft. I would say Embiid has reached expectations for whatever the best possible expectations were for, this guy, Kansas, hasn't spent a lot of time playing basketball. We'll see where this goes. I remember at the draft, I compared him to like Serge Ibaka. Because I did that draft. And I was like, I think this guy is like a Serge. He could be like a better Serge Ibaka, basically. Because remember, he was skinnier and he just seemed like. And now he's morphed into what he's morphed into. But when you think like how many nadirs we had with the Joel experience, like, it's kind of amazing. The guy's averaging 34 points a game.
Missed two full seasons at the start of his career. A lot of organizational drama. It's a big season for the Sixers, by the way. It was, as we know, but it's a big season for the Sixers. Like, it's,
and also you say organizational drama, also like some whiffs, like just like some fork in the road trades where even in the moment it seemed like a little sketchy, and then it couldn't have worked out worse. Like, even if you just said the Fultz trade, and the Mikal Bridges trade, like, those are just, he could just easily have Tatum and Bridges on his team.
If you just went chalk.
All right, now it gets a little harder. So you have, for your starters, you're putting the four best with Mitchell.
Yeah, I cheated. I'll have to revisit this when it counts.
I went more traditional with Giannis at center, Durant, Tatum, Mitchell, and Haliburton. But even then, I cheated slightly with Giannis at center. And if Giannis isn't a center, then I'm going to cheat the other way and make Tatum a guard and put Embiid in there. After this, then the All-Star candidates, and you're going to reveal all of them in your column. You're not going to name all your All-Stars today, but... I'm just in order of guys that I think have to be discussed. DeRozan. Having a better year statistically than he had last year.
Got hurt last night, hopefully.
Got hurt last night. It should be okay, but it's funny because I had written down 41 of 41 games. He's durable yet again. He is 2 games away from 1,000, Zach Lowe. Plus 63 wow. playoff games. He's played over 37,000 minutes. He's 33 years old and still looks like the same DeRozan we've been watching for seven years. Yeah. 36 minutes a game, which I appreciate. And this 19-22 Bulls season, I was in blow it up mode with them, but watching them the last couple weeks, it's clear that they should not blow it up. I think they have to take it right to the edge of the trade deadline and see where they are and see what the record is. They do have some good pieces, but Levine's going again.
Not an all-star. Do we agree? Not an all-star this year.
Levine. Oh God, no. No, I haven't liked some of the stuff.
Just for purposes of this podcast, that's not to say anything. He's happy. Like you said, the last 2 weeks, he's looked like Zach Levine again. And
he
has had some monster games.
The Bulls are, you can already see what their future is, which is the 1 and 2 seeds being like, kind of don't want to see the Bulls as an 8 seed, if that's okay. Give me one of the shittier teams. You know who I don't want to see when I'm the 1 seed in round 1 is the fucking Bulls. No thanks.
I like that you're planting your flag on being bullish on the Bulls when everyone spent this entire last calendar year being like, it's not going to work. They're mediocre. They stink. Like KOC's been on blow it up mode for
a while. I 1,000% agreed with them. Well, you know how I felt about those Lakers picks. I was like, I just want to be the first in line for the Laker picks. They're handing them out. I'll take them. Thank you. This is great because you're not going to have a team in 5 years of anybody. But I don't know. I think the last 3 weeks, they've kind of figured some stuff out. There was a moment there where I actually thought Donovan was one of the worst coaches in the league. I didn't understand some of the stuff they were doing.
Anyway, I don't want to talk about the Bulls. Yeah, so go ahead. So DeMar, yeah, he's on my... You remember I said I had my 5 starters and I had 5 guys I felt like pretty confident these guys should be there. He's one of
DeMar's
them.
DeMar's one of them. Is Siakam another one of them?
Yes.
Yeah. And another one where... 26-8-7. That seems like a lot for points, rebounds, and assists. That's like a vintage LeBron season.
And he's slowed down a little bit in the last 3 or 4 weeks. But yeah, and they're plus 3.5 per 100 with him on the floor, minus 5 with him off the floor. Something's just wrong with their team, though. Something is just wrong with their team.
Nurse knows because he's playing everybody big minutes. Which is always the sign of like, I don't really trust what's happening here. I'm just going to play my best guys and keep my fingers crossed.
I would love to have been in their draft room when they picked Malachi Flynn over Desmond Bain. I wonder how in on Bain they were, because there's such a length and wingspan construction right now. And that was the knock on Bain, right? That he doesn't have a great wingspan. He's too small, blah, blah, blah. But like that one hurts. There's a lot of Desmond Bain regret around the league, to be clear. But like I was right there for him. Siakam's got to be in the All-Star game.
I don't think Van Vliet's played well.
I don't think he thinks he's played well. I mean, he's been on podcasts galore the last couple weeks, basically saying I'm shooting like crap and I need to shoot better. And, you know, undersized point guard who's not a great playmaker, like just needs to make more threes. He's never been a good 2-point shooter, needs to make threes.
And Barnes we covered. Yeah, it's that team feels off. It's move to number one on the who's going to make a trade rankings. To me, they're the clear number one now. So they'll do something. And also, a team that you've been wired in with for over a decade now, a team just completely unafraid to zag.
Or the Raptors?
They are an all-time, we don't care. We'll do whatever if we don't like what we see, or if we like what we see, just be prepared. They're the guy in your fantasy draft that keeps you on your toes year after year. Like, what are these guys doing?
Yes,
this team,
and no.
I could see them blowing it up. I could see them go. I could see them adding. I don't know what to make of them.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of them either. But they did. The flip side is they held on to those Lowry DeRozan teams for like a long time, like past when people thought like, yeah, okay, they're cute. They won't. We know they won't win. against LeBron. Like
they, you could argue that that was a good move. I mean, they made the conference finals that one year. I don't know. When you're playing Scotty Barnes as like a super undersized center, that's just a gimmick. That means you don't know what to do with your team. Another team that I don't think knows what to do with their team. And one of my next all-star guy is Bam.
Yeah, we got the same kind of like next. Bam's got to be there. Bam has been, I know I'm captain of the Bam wagon, but 21 and 10, 3 assists, 54% shooting, plus 3 with him on the floor, minus 5.5 per 100 when he sits. He's defensively, he's everywhere all the time. He's been sensational for them. Absolutely got to be in the all-star game, I think.
Why is that team 21 and 20 in your opinion?
I mean, how many games does Butler miss now? 14. Bam's missed 4. Lowry is a regular single digit scorer. You know, they've had some injuries. Their depth has been suspect compared to how it usually is. But yeah, they're not. I mean, you look at Butler, Bam, and Hero have been like all pretty much at expectations when they've played, and they're still 21 and 20. Now they are starting to get healthy, and I think they're like 9-5 in their last 14, which is not great, but you know, let's give it a month and see if they can put it together, because they more than the Bulls, maybe it may, you know, you kind of hinted at the Bulls is like, I don't want to see those guys.
Oh, Miami's definitely and I don't want to see those guys. Yeah, because Miami, they have so much confidence.
Yeah, Miami is, I think, outranks the Bulls as like, ooh, I got to play them in the first round. That's kind of a crappy reward for being the number one seed or number two seed or whatever.
You could feel it in that Friday Celtics game, the second one of the back-to-back. When Butler came back, Boston was just sailing. And Miami that whole game was like, all right, let's see how good you are. And they just beat the shit out of the Celtics for 4 quarters. I thought the Sunday moment, the crunch time when there's like 4 seconds left and like Jimmy's getting the ball. I wonder, is he going to do the thing where he runs to the corner and shoots the 3, or is he just going to barrel the basket and try to get a call? And he did the Jimmy thing where he just like he beat somebody. He flung himself, I think, into Royce O'Neal and does that thing where it just seems like he's trying to get contact, but then he'll almost make the shot. And then he puts the ref in the position of, do I call that? What was that? That guy initiated, and it was a good no call. But he's fucking scary. He's scary at all points of the game. And you're right. I don't want to see him in the finals. You don't think there's no trade possibility with him, right?
With them trading him?
Yeah, let's say they're 22 and 29 in 3 weeks.
He's tough to trade, man. That contract's a big contract. But
it's a lot of money left.
That would surprise me. That would surprise me. So we've named... however we arrange them, we've named 10 guys who are our first 10 guys. We actually both, without consulting each other, had the same first 10 guys. Tatum, Giannis, Durant, Embiid, Mitchell, Siakam, Bam, Tyrese, DeRozan, Brown. So that we only got 2 spots left. That's it. If we think those are the top 10, there's only 2 left. And then it gets tricky because, like, I don't know. The advanced stats, as long as we're on the Heat, like scream that Jimmy Butler is still Jimmy Butler, and he's missed 14 games. Harden's missed 15 games. He's going to lead the league in assists once he qualifies over Halliburton. Like, I don't know what to do with any of these guys.
You won't be shocked to know Harden wasn't on my final list.
Why though?
Because I have other guys I like. We'll take one more break and then we'll zip through this. All right, you asked me why Harden wasn't on my list. So let's just say I have a guard spot and a front court spot left. And the guards that we haven't gone through yet are Kyrie Irving, Jalen Brunson, Darius Garland, and a guy that you and I value probably more than anybody except for Herau Bob, Drew Holiday, who I blind put him in. It's like when I see the French onion soup at dinner and I'm like, this place has French onion soup, blind in. Not even thinking about it.
You know,
I'm not
going to
look
at
the kitchen. I'm not going to ask questions. I'm in.
Crispy Brussels sprouts appetizer. Every time.
So crispy Brussels sprouts for you, French onion soup for me, and Drew Holiday for both of us. Just blind in. He's always in the mix. So Kyrie is having an awesome statistical season, but really no different than every other Kyrie season, because he's always 25-5-5. He's always around 50-40-90. He's been on his best behavior for 6 weeks. Now Durant's out. And Kyrie's in I got this mode now, which I think could go in a variety of directions. We saw one direction when he ended the game the other night with the 35-foot shot with 6 seconds left on the clock that they put back in. But that was like, uh-oh, that wasn't a great sign. I have no idea where it could go. He could do something dumb or say something dumb at any moment and blow this up. But it's looked pretty good for 6 weeks. He's been on his best behavior, and I think he's played really hard on both ends. He's like rebounding. He's diving into traffic. So he's not one of my favorite players, but I got to hand it to him.
He's going to get one of your last two spots?
No. I just got to hand it to him I thought he hit rock bottom as an asset.
Yeah, I was on this podcast
once with Michael Pena like 5 weeks ago. I was like, would you trade Dinwiddie and Dwight Powell for Kyrie? And Michael was like, no. And I was like, you're right. I wouldn't either. Like, I wouldn't. Kyrie's too risky. And now he's kind of at least rehabilitated himself.
Look, 26, 5 and 5. The shooting numbers are what they are. He's only missed 10 games. Like he's missed fewer games than Butler, Harden, even Drew.
It was
Holiday's
a loud
missed
10 games. It was very loud.
Well, that's the. It's the thing that I will struggle with is like, can I be an all-star when I tweet out, let's just call it a problematic movie, and I get suspended, and the Anti-Defamation League is like, yeah, we don't want your money. And then my whole team is like in complete chaos because of me. And now that's passed and they're not in complete chaos anymore. But if we're looking at this season, like, I don't know. It's going to be a tough one.
Fortunately, he's not on our list. Garland, I want to get to Brunson because Brunson's going to be my pick. You mentioned all the Garland stuff. I just want to pay homage to him for 8 seconds. I'm just glad people like Garland still exist in basketball. These kind of unselfish point guards who can look for their own stuff, but are concerned about the other guys. I don't think we have a lot of them anymore. So I don't want him to feel slighted in case he heard this for some reason.
I love Darius Garland.
Me too.
And the best compliment I can give him is I feel very comfortable when the ball is in his hands. If I'm a Cavs fan, I trust his decision making. I trust his shooting. Someone on Twitter I saw compared him to Steve Nash the other night. And although
that's interesting, I was thinking more younger Chris Paul. He reminds me of,
but it you know, he does the under the rim thing that Nash used to do and all that. Like I get who. I apologize. I can't credit the person. I don't remember who they were, but I get that because there's a certain just sort of like, all right, the right decision is going to be made here because Darius Garland has the ball.
I'm a huge fan. I can't wait to see where his career is. It just seems like he just gets it. I want my point guard to get it. He understands, like, I've got to take care of guys on my team, when to lay out, that he just wants the team to win. He wants to make the right play. And I think last year he was put in that position of kind of having to do too much because they didn't really have any creators. And that's not who he is. I think he's a way more unselfish player than that. I'm a huge, huge, huge fan. All right, so
sell me on. You don't actually have to sell me on Brunson, but let me hear Holiday.
Do you know how many years Holiday's been in the league?
I remember those Sixers teams. It's got to be so like 13 years, 12 years.
Yeah, Drew Holiday's a 14-year veteran.
Yeah,
he's 32 years old. He's played 867 games, 65 playoff games, and 30,000 plus minutes, and he's not even in his mid-30s yet. I don't understand it, but he's having a typical Drew Holiday season. All right, here's the Jalen Brunson case. First of all, the Knicks are 22 and 19. Second of all, in the last 5 minutes of a game, not only are they not a disaster, there's real confidence from the fans, from the players, that we're in good hands with Jalen Brunson, which when was the last fucking time the Knicks could say that? He's averaging 22, 4, and 7. He's not a 50-40-90 guy, but not far away, 47-38-85. Usage rate, 26.4. Old school, 80s guy. Fourth in clutch scoring, just total number of points. And it feels like his team, which I think is the single most important thing. And I would give him my guard spot right now if the season ended today, because I think to go into that weird Knicks situation, the city that always feels like they never found the right point guard. Oh, we didn't get Mitchell, blah, blah, blah. Oh my God, Jalen Brunson, so much money. And then he's just made it his team. And I love watching him. And I think in crunch time, he can go toe-to-toe against these other dudes. We saw it last night. He went toe-to-toe with Holiday. He's a toe-to-toe guy, which they've never had. So Right now, I'd give him the spot.
Yeah, he's 29 of 53 from the field in the last 5 minutes of games when the score is within five points. It's like almost 60%. I was going to ask you, I don't like to think about All-Star this way because every team context is so different, but you do run into these things where it's like, is it weird to give the Knicks two All-Stars, but the Bucks just won? That feels weird, but maybe it isn't weird. Like if you had to pick Brunson or Randall, you only get one Nick. You're picking Brunson?
No, I think I'm picking Brunson, and I think I'm picking Jimmy Butler over Randall, if those are my choices. I think I would rather have Butler and Brunson than Randall and Holiday. And I think now I'm going to neg Drew Holiday, even though we just loved him. I do think that part of their creator issues that they've had this year, it should be a tiny bit blame on him, right?
Yeah,
you don't have Middleton for the whole year. Like, can you step up? And he kind of is who he is. But at the same time, I love him. It's one of my favorite players. This Jalen Brunson thing, is this a 2004 Nash level mistake for you yet? That Dallas didn't keep him.
Oh.
Turn the fucking TikTok camera on, Kyle.
Oh, that even
because here's why I mentioned that. Now, obviously, losing Nash for $60 million, there were some defensible pieces to that. He got his ass kicked in the playoff series that year. He had some back issues. I don't think anybody could have predicted the hand check rules and all the things that moved into Nash's favor. At the same time, it was fucking stupid not to keep Steve Nash.
And even no one could have predicted D'Antoni would like come in and revolutionize the league.
You can't predict all that stuff. And yet it was stupid not to keep Steve Nash, and they signed Eric Dampier, which is worse. This Brunson thing to me is more inexcusable, more indefensible, and stupider because they could have had him for 4 for 55 before the season. They could have had him for 4 for 55 in January during the season. Rick Brunson, you can go back and read this. Rick Brunson, who was handling it for his son, he said, quote, "I told the Mavericks once the season has started, there's no contract talk. And I went back against my word. In January, I thought he did enough where he deserved the extension. I said, hey, take the money, man. He wants security. He wants to live here. And they declined. And now I'm saying he's going to be an all-star in the East. And the Dallas is wasting this incredible Luka season where they have no second star, basically. I think it's almost worse to waste the Luka season. As great as Dirk was, Luka's the ceiling of him is just higher. Like if they had Brunson, you would say they're probably the favorite in the West or a co-favorite. So I don't think it's quite a Nash level mistake, but I'm ready to have the conversation, Zach Lowe.
I mean, Nash is a two-time MVP.
I get it.
There's also the, like, if they had Brunson, they probably wouldn't have Wood thing, which I don't know if you care about that, but it might be an either or just financially.
I don't care. You may not care. I'm good.
I've said this before, all the focus on the extension that they didn't offer in a timely enough fashion, which would look like they would be the best contract in the NBA right now, or top five contract in the NBA from a team value perspective. I remember talking about this a month into the season with a smart person from another team. Said, well, Zach, forget about that. Like, why didn't they just pay him the max? Like why didn't they just outbid the Knicks? Like, that was an option too. And they, like when the fallback plan is nothing, just pay him $30 million and hope he's worth it. And I was like, oh man, I didn't really think, I was thinking so much about 4 years, 55. I kind of forgot they could have just done that too.
I think it's a bigger mistake because it's less defensible. Losing Nash, obviously, and he becomes, that's like a higher end mistake. This is like, I still can't believe they didn't see what they had. I think they overreacted because he wasn't that great in the 21 playoffs. And probably you can't predict what was going to happen down the stretch in the 22 playoffs, but holy shit. And then it was so funny. Like, I'm sure you had Knicks fans in your life too, who are like, what the fuck with this Jalen Brunson? Why are we paying him $110 million? And just having to have over and over the conversation of like, Jalen Brunson's good.
Good player.
He's completely unafraid.
You guys haven't had a reliable point guard in.
Yeah.
forever. You know, I mean, Derrick Rose has been really good for them, changed their season a couple seasons ago and they won 48 games. But you know that there's an expiration date on and a minutes limit on Derrick Rose.
It's such a bummer because Luka is so special that I'm trying to maintain every good piece I have around that guy. And you just can't say that not keeping him. 4 for 55 is nothing. I mean, that's fucking, they're paying $16 million for Bertans, $17 million for Tim Hardaway, what, $12 million for Reggie Bullock, $11 million for Dwight Powell, but the $16 million for Brunson was the deal breaker. It's weird. It doesn't add up.
I do think you're right that his playoff performance pre last year's conference finals run probably sparked some like, ooh, small guard playoffs. You know, we run into these teams, they put big wings on him. Is that going to just be a thing for his whole career? I do think that may have factored into it.
Even as a trade asset, 4 for 55, and you can put him with two other contracts. Look, man, they've had a lot of turmoil and topsy-turvy shit happening in that organization, including our friend Haral Bob was there, who's no longer there. I just think they missed the boat on that one. The Julius Randle we mentioned, and the only one we didn't mention is just if they do that weird thing where they feel like they have to put another center, Jared Allen versus Nick Claxton. I can't believe Nick Claxton, I even wrote him down in an all-star list, but defensively he's been an absolute monster and he has to be at least mentioned.
I completely agree, and I said on my pod that just came out today, I'm going to sound like an insane person, but I put Nick Claxton on my like long list of all-star candidates. So can I throw a couple names at you and you can tell me how seriously you consider them?
I have five more names on my list that we haven't mentioned. So you let's see if it's on the list.
Brook Lopez?
Didn't have him on.
Not enough scoring?
Not enough scoring. I do think his the pivot that his career took over the last 6 years is just confounding. I don't understand how he turned into this player versus where we were in 2014. I don't understand it.
Shooting 38% on threes, 61% on twos, might be the defense player of the year front runner. I would not vote for him as defense player of the year, but a lot of people will. Yeah, I'd vote him pretty high, but
you'd have to say over Bam if we're talking. So you're saying you would have him over the Claxton and Jared Allen combo?
I'm just saying he's on my. Okay. I think I actually would have him over both of those guys.
Okay.
I'll tell you the numbers.
Don't say both, it. Don't. Both of,
let
no.
Me say it.
No.
Okay.
Don't.
Who do you think I was going to say?
Were you going to say Trae Young right there?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry, the numbers upset.
Both traditional counting stats and the advanced numbers actually quite surprised me. Kristaps Porzingis has a real all-star case. why are you laughing?
No, I looked at it too, and then I was like, "Ah, it's just that Porzingis. I can't do it."
What? What is it? Just that they play for the Wizards, like that, and Wizards is a silly name. Like 22-9 on good shooting, good defense. The team is good when he's on the floor. Like I don't like. Advanced numbers are good, and you just laughed.
It just seems like when the Wizards are on anyone's schedule, the other team says, "Oh, let's rest Kawhi today, or whoever it is."
If we're giving Claxton and Jared Allen a look, can Miles Turner get a look? I mean, he has better numbers than both of them.
He probably should.
Okay.
I was just looking at the Nick Claxton defense stuff, like blew my mind. And Jared Allen reputation, just that, you know.
Miles Turner, 17-8, 38% from three, 64% from two. Defense is, you know, it's Miles Turner. He's pretty damn good.
Also, seems really psyched to be on this team. I can't say I love Miles's body language playing in the Twin Towers with Sabonis and just being used as a 3-point shooter, and I don't blame him. But really, it's funny, like him, Halliburton, Buddy Hield, who I think people always thought was kind of an issue in Sacramento on and off the court to play with, and maybe wasn't always the happiest guy, but I think in Indiana, he seems super happy. It's just funny that Carlisle is overseeing this team of like this young, happy team of reclaim projects. And it wasn't what I would have predicted with Carlisle.
Give me, I want to know the other names that you said you had five other names on your list. I'm hoping there was one guy that I just thought you were not going to be able to resist just mentioning his name in the conversation. And I'm wondering if he's on your list.
Well, I was looking at forward backups for Randall and Butler.
Here it comes. Here it comes. I can feel it.
Franz?
Yes! That's the one. I knew it. I was like, Franz is going to be.
Look, man, 24-4, 49-35,
86%. I'm looking at this. He's on my long list, too. I know he's going to find a way to work Franz Wagner into this.
I have him like 15th on my list.
Do you think the Celtics would trade Tatum for Franz Wagner? Would you do that?
Stop. Is Franz Wagner the number one pick in that draft?
Would the Celtics have to throw in a pick?
Stop. Here's the other thing with Franz Wagner. Really weird guard situation on that team, right? It's just
you
like
think?
It's just Paolo, like every
he's
night
the
it's
starting two guard with next to Bol Bol yeah. and Banchero and Wendell Carter Jr. when they're healthy.
And then it's like, oh, Anthony's playing today. Oh, here's Suggs. Oh, like, but it doesn't seem to really matter. And I've been shocked by how much Magic I've watched. Was not expecting that. Yeah, so if we redid the draft, Mobley's one. But I think Franz is two. And I don't even really think it's debatable.
Cade's three?
Is he?
Well, wait, Scotty Barnes would be three.
Is he?
Well, who am I forgetting? Your guy, Jalen Green? Are you going to say Herb Jones should be the number three pick in the draft?
I love Josh Giddey.
Oh, Josh Giddey's good. Josh Giddey's really good.
I think if I had to do it over again, I would do Mobley, Franz, and I think Giddey's third for me.
Can we
and,
just
and Cade drops to four only because I don't understand what's going on with his leg or why he had to miss the whole season. So,
can we just take a quick detour given the Jalen Green mention and your off and again relationship with Jalen Green. Friendship. Yeah. We'll call it a friendship.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him.
What's your level of concern watching the Rockets? Like, I don't really understand what's happening
high.
There.
High.
Should we just leave it there? Like, I watched him. I'm like, this is...
None of the guys have gotten better except for Şengün.
Şengün's good.
I just thought Green was going to be a little more advanced this year as a creator, but they just seem like a mess. I don't think there's real stakes because they're in the Wembanyama thing. I don't think that coach is necessarily going to be there next year. And it's alarming sometimes with them. You're flicking on League Pass and it's like, oh, the Rockets are down 30. It's not good. And I don't love the body language. I just don't like a lot of it so far. Now the Rockets fans are going to get mad again.
The Eric Gordon, no improvement. No improvement the other day was like, oh, he's one step from writing trade me on his shoes like Chris Morris back in the day.
Well, you know, when the players start talking to the press that there are problems, that's like the final level. That's why this Atlanta thing got so weird. Nate McMillan like openly talking to the press about stories being written about the team and So anyway, I had Franz. I wrote down Bogdanović and Kuzma just because of the stats they're putting up. But
yeah, you got to write them down. You got to write them down.
And then the last guy I wrote down was Trae Young. We didn't really talk about Harden. Harden's 22-11-6, but he's missed a ton of games.
I think you're underselling Harden. Let me make the case for Harden, and it's not a case that I'm thrilled to make. 22-11-6 would lead the league in assists if he qualified.
Yeah. But didn't because he's missed 16
shooting,
games.
But he's missed 15 games. That's fine. Everyone's missed some amount of games. But a lot of people have missed games. Plus 6.5 with him on the floor per 100 possessions versus plus 1.5 off. And they are a solid positive when he plays without Embiid, which is that's been the missing ingredient for them. I think he's been really, really good. And
he's an absolute zero defensively.
Okay.
I'm just going to add that to everything
you
laid out.
I'm not going to argue with that. He's
like a DH. He's a DH.
Okay. I think he deserves. So you just, he's out for you. Too many missed games.
No, if he had played 34 games instead of 40, I probably would have had him on. But he's missed 16 games and he doesn't play defense. So
you're not even going to give, did you at least write down DeJounte Murray?
You know, no? I didn't. I tried to keep it a Hawks-free list. Wait, I have one thing on Harden. So from 17 to 21, the five seasons, he was 10.5 free throw attempts a game, 54% on two-pointers.
Okay.
Last two seasons, 7.9 free throw attempts a game, 47.7% on two-pointers. I get nervous when you're a guard, if you're under 50% on two-pointers and your free throw attempts are going down. 50 years of watching the league and studying the stats and stuff, to me, that points to the arrow pointing down.
Well, I don't think anyone would argue with you there. And 48% on twos, you'd like to be better. I would just say 8 free throw attempts a game is still a lot. And if I'm just considering this year and my, and if I'm the Sixers, my goals of winning the title this year and James Harden's all-star candidacy this year, like for a guard, that's still a lot of free throws. For James Harden, it's not a lot of free throws. But that's,
and there's some games where
good.
He just seems like he's 25 feet from the basket, and that's how he's decided to play that night's game. The Trey thing, 28-10, the 31% 3-point shooting is just absolutely bizarre. The usage rate of almost 34%. He doesn't play defense at all. He's gets picked on constantly, and I'm just disappointed. I wanted him to be better as a basketball player after 5 years in the league, and I don't feel like he's any different than he was 3 years ago, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're getting outscored when he's on the floor. They're -5 per under possessions when he plays without DeJounte.
Everyone stands around and watches him.
I do think that it's a real thing of like, if this guy dominates the ball and I have to cover for him all the time on defense, like that's going to strain any team, team. And
might be two coaches in the Trae Young graveyard soon.
He hasn't hit enough threes. Like he's an offense unto himself. I mean, that's the thing. But like the Hawks are 22nd in offense. Like very quietly, the Hawks have been a bad offensive team, and they're built to be they were number 2 last year, and they're built to be a great offensive team and a team that just does just enough on defense. Like they're 22nd in offense.
The only silver lining, I mentioned this last week on the pod, is that when their best five guys play together, the plus minus stuff's pretty good.
Yeah, they're,
so that,
they're
at least
starting
that's like
a
foundation.
A
yeah, that's a foundation of
the other silver lining is they traded one fewer first round pick for DeJounte Murray than the Timberwolves traded for Rudy Gobert.
And they have to pay Murray what, in a year? Year and 3 months? And he's not going to be taking a discount.
I would think not. DeJounte Murray is really good. I'm not making fun of the trade. I'm just highlighting. I couldn't resist bringing up Gobert.
Can I ask you a question? If they traded DeJounte Murray again in the next 12 months, if he moved a second time, would you be shocked?
No, nothing would shock me. Nothing. Okay. If they traded Trae Young in 18 months, it wouldn't shock me.
If they traded Trae Young in 6 months, would you be shocked?
What is it now? January? So you're shocked? No, I mean, it's hard. What's the last trade that shocked you? I guess Halliburton Sabonis was like, whoa, that was it. Like, but what actually is that? Would actually Harden back in the day, Harden 1 shock? Like what
Harden
shocked you now?
1.0 trade?
Yeah. What actually shocked you? Like what if
Halliburton Sabonis,
like,
was a jaw dropper.
I mean,
let me
guys,
ask you
like,
this.
The top 10 guys don't get traded. So it's like, there's no, like, obviously if Giannis got traded, that would be a shocker, but those things don't happen.
If Trae Young got traded within the next 4 weeks, would you be shocked?
No.
Me neither. I think the last truly shocking thing that happened was Kawhi going to the Clippers and Paul George joining him.
That was
the last like truly jaw-dropping, shocking night we've had in the NBA.
When there was a literal earthquake in Las Vegas during Summer League.
That was one. Nobody saw that one coming.
Porzingis to Dallas kind of came fast.
Oh, the Kyrie trade was kind of shocking to Boston. That's a good one.
That the timing of that one was weird too. That was a late in the game.
Yeah.
Trade. Okay. All right.
I'm so glad we got through this whole pod without talking about LeBron or the Lakers. I will be joining you on what, Friday morning? We're doing the low post.
Yeah, that's the plan. After what I'm going to, because I'm going to Celtics Nets Thursday, which was supposed to be a mega game and is now less of a mega game. And I have bad news for you. We are going to have to talk about LeBron and the Lakers on the low post.
I can't wait.
We're doing Western Conference All-Stars.
Can one request? Can we put a time limit on how long we're allowed to talk about Jokic? Like maybe we have Dan, your producer. Maybe it's like 12 minutes and we have to move on. We're not allowed to go more than 12 minutes.
I think that's like how every group needs a designated driver or something. Like we just, someone needs to regulate us on Jokic.
A couple of people are like, dude, you're pretty overboard on Jokic. So I'm like, am I? Says who? Like, I'm sorry. I never thought I would see anybody do the Bird Magic stuff again. I just did. I'm so delighted by it.
25, 11, and 9.7 assists. And he's shooting 62%.
I can't believe
it's
how
hard
many,
to go overboard. It's hard.
I can't believe how many Nuggets games I watch.
They're
and I'm starting
to
think about them mentally. Like, as I watch them, like, oh man, one more shooter and we're good. And I'm like, oh no. But I just want Jokic to have a moment so badly. It's just Jokic, not the Nuggets. I just want him to make the finals.
What if
then
they
I'll root for the Celtics. That'll be fine. But I want Jokic to make the finals because I don't want him to be a guy that he's, you know, about to turn 30 and like, well, he never made the finals. And then it's like, fuck you. That's not why we watch this stuff. This guy is the most fun guy to play with in the league since I don't even remember when. Certainly since you and I knew each other. And he does stuff every night that I've just never seen before. And he's just... Anyway, all right. Well, we used up two of the 10, 12 minutes for Friday. Zach Lowe, good to see you. I'll see you on Friday.
Always fun. I'll talk to you.
All right, that's it for the podcast. Thanks to Zach Lowe. Thanks to Kyle Creighton. Don't forget, Rewatchables went up Monday night. We did Sideways, and then I'm going to be on the Off the Pike podcast on Wednesday talking Red Sox and Patriots. And if you want to hear more basketball, read more basketball, go to the Ringer Podcast Network or theringer.com, where we just ranked top 100 players. I will see you on the Boston pod on Wednesday and on this feed on Thursday, the big playoff preview round one. Can't wait. I wanna see them, wanna waste some-